It's been a staggering 10 weeks since the last Formula 2 round, but it's finally back. And we've got plenty to talk about as we approach the final doubleheader of the season. I'm Craig Willard, and joining me to discuss all of the goings on that we've had over the past 10 weeks, what's actually happened this season, because we've all forgotten, and who's actually in championship contention, is Bethany Waring and Roger Gascoigne. So, folks, I guess we should probably get straight into the thick of the action, and the action will take place this weekend on two entirely new layouts, on an entirely new layout, and we've got a heavily revised layout for next week's action as well. Formula 2 will be heading to Saudi Arabia for the first time at the brand new Jeddah circuit, whilst it'll be heading to Abu Dhabi for its finale on what is a very, very heavily revised circuit. So the debate over whether we should be going to Saudi Arabia or not is probably for another time, I think, and perhaps once we've got thoughts from some of the key people involved. But I think we should talk about the circuit and the layout that we've got. We've got 27 corners. It looks incredibly fast. And I think it's fair that there's a little bit of apprehension over the safety aspects of the circuit, how good the racing might be, and just how well things are going to pan out throughout the weekend. So Bethany, I'll come to you first, because I mean, in the land of British Formula 4, you've got some pretty funky circuits that that the drivers go to. Same with Ginetta Juniors, of course, such as Fruxton, which is another scarily fast circuit with some very quick corners and so forth. So really, what's your thoughts on the Jeddah circuit that we're off to this weekend?
Well, yeah, most of it's supposed to be flat out. I don't know if that was just for F1, probably, but I'm sure the F2 drivers will spend a fair bit of it going quite fast. It's been so long since the rest of the season. I can't actually remember how good these drivers are at not crashing into one another, but I can't think of anything major. So fingers crossed they can avoid too much drama. We know F2 can have good racing even when the track isn't the best for racing. So hopefully we'll have some good racing. And I think they should be able to do well to mind one another, especially in the first sprint race, because that's the one that's going to have the most impact on the next race, if that makes sense. That's the one that's going to decide their starting positions for the second sprint race. So they'll probably be a bit more cautious in race one. If we're going to have any drama, it'll probably be race two, where there's less points on offer and you don't have race three to worry about. And then they'll probably calm down a bit for race three in terms of how much crashing happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. The way how I look at the circuit, it reminds me a little bit of it's like a hybrid of Baku and Suzuka and Monza and Sochi and the unraced Hanoi circuit, all on steroids, such as the crazy layout really that we've got. So Roger, coming to you, it does seem like an absolutely bonkers circuit. What are your thoughts coming into this event?
I'm probably less optimistic than Bethany about the number of impacts that it's going to be. Just trying to think back to the very first Baku race. Wasn't the Formula 2 there an absolute crash fest? And then everybody thought the Formula 1 was going to be manic and it was deathly dull and nothing happened for the whole race. So as you said, Baku is probably one of the circuits that it definitely has a lot of elements in common with the Jeddah circuit that we've seen of it. So I would expect some safety cars to be liberally sprinkled, maybe not the first sprint race for the reasons Bethany gave, but I think safety cars are going to play a role, which obviously impacts strategy and timing of pit stops and so on. And I spoke to one of the teams which have been doing some sim testing on the Dallara sim, and they said they really expect it to sort of sort out the top drivers from the average ones, but to be a real premium on the quality. And you really, I guess, because of the speed and the fact the barriers are so close by, I mean, it's sort of Monaco barriers with Baku or Monza speeds. So, you know, that's going to be a big challenge. Hopefully, you know, there are no incidents or random safety car events which completely throw a spanner into the championship discussions, but I think it's going to be exciting, but I think there's going to be plenty of car damage over the weekend.
Yeah, certainly it's going to be a lot of work for the mechanics to do, so hopefully they're very well rested. They've had plenty of opportunity to be after the massive gap between Sochi and now. They haven't even had any Formula 3 rounds to necessarily worry about. So if they're doing both championships, and they've got no excuse to not be ready, that's for sure. Yeah, I think it's going to be quite an eventful weekend, to say the least. Sort of, be it with Formula 1 or with Formula 2, let's not talk about Formula 1. We've got our own exciting championship decider to very much talk about. But I guess we should also cover off the changes to the Abu Dhabi layout, which is, of course, where the championship is likely to be decided. I very highly doubt it's going to be sealed this weekend. Oscar Piastri does have a chance to do it, but I don't think it will necessarily happen. But the Abu Dhabi circuit, some of the twiddly bits have been taken out, and some of the corners have been opened up, particularly the very tight hairpin before the first very long straight, and the corner at the end of the second very long straight is now a fast banked sweeper, and some of the street circuit-esque corners towards the end of the lap have been opened up ever so slightly as well. So it's not necessarily clear as to which teams that might necessarily suit and which teams it might not suit, because of how bizarre the calendars have been over the past couple of years and how little data we've necessarily got to go off, and also the amount of prep that teams have perhaps been able to do over this extended gap. So you can probably rip up the form book, I think, for, you know, coming into these weekends. So I guess, coming back to you, Roger, what are your thoughts on the changes that have been made to Abu Dhabi? Obviously, the very first major changes that have been made to that circuit since it came onto the calendar more than a decade ago.
Yeah, I'm quite excited to see what it's going to change in the racing. I mean, that sort of, I think getting rid of the twiddly bits into the tight left hander leading onto the first straight, I think that can only be positive. I think that was a bit of a waste of time. But at the end of the second straight, I mean, that was a passing place with DRS down the straight, and there was braking into that sort of left-right. So whether the banking, you know, it's going to be interesting, or in that fast corner, but whether that takes away some overtaking, I guess we'll find out when we get there. So I haven't really heard much about it, and or also from the Formula One teams in terms of what they expect. I guess it's for the Formula, well, for both Formula One and Formula Two, particularly Formula Two, you know, both circuits are new. So certainly for the drivers, I mean, Abu Dhabi wasn't on the calendar last year. I'm not sure whether there's anybody who was still around in 2019. Obviously, the teams will have some data, and we'll come back when we discuss the individual competitors a bit later. But you know, even for the teams, that takes away some of their knowledge. So maybe that that sort of evens things out between the more experienced drivers and some of the rookies, albeit, you know, now at the end of their first seasons. So I think it'd be interesting going to, you know, one completely new and one for the Formula 2 drivers, at least completely new, and for the team, slightly new track in the run-in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. I believe Joe is the only one of the main competitors at race at Abu Dhabi, but of course that was back when the cars were using the 13-inch Pirelli rim tyres. Bethany, have you got anything else really to add on Abu Dhabi?
No, not that I can think of. I'm just glad we don't have double points to have to worry about.
Good. Yes, also very much agree with that. So I guess we should move straight on to all of the driver switcheroos that we've had, and we've had plenty go on over the past few weeks, and we've got four FIA Formula 3 graduates making their debut this weekend, just to add to the perilness that we've got with Jeddah. So it'll be very interesting to see how they get on what is almost certainly the most terrifying circuit on the calendar in their very first weekend. Entirely new lineup for MP Motorsport, with Formula 3 teammates Jack Doohan and Clément Novalak stepping up. They finished second and third in the championship in Formula 3. They're replacing Richard Vachon, who's run out of budget, and Larim Zendeli, who's run out of budget. We've also got Ollie Caldwell, who raced for Prema this year. He finished eighth in the standings, won a race. He will be driving for Campos in place of David Beckman, budget, of course. And we've also got Logan Sargeant, who makes a long-awaited Formula 2 debut. He will be driving with HWA in place of Jake Hughes. So I guess, Bethany, coming to you, what are your thoughts on the four new drivers that we've got for this weekend, and how do you think that they're going to stack up?
There are four drivers who we can say they've definitely earned places on the F2 grid, even though, say, Caldwell and Sargeant, they weren't at the front of the championship standings, but they're two very competent drivers. Sargeant arguably should have been in F2 this year. I don't think there's any arguably about it. Sargeant should have been in F2 this year, but couldn't get that put together. And obviously, Doohan and Novalak were they weren't quite able to challenge Halger in F3, but they were two very good drivers and made the season as a whole entertaining. So to see them on the grid in F2, getting those couple of races underway before, hopefully for all of them, a full campaign next year is great. It's just a shame that so many drivers have had budget problems that so late in the season. Well, any point in the season, it's such a shame that these drivers are getting budget problems. Is one of those things you kind of have to come to expect in Formula 2 and Formula 3, but it's given a great opportunity to some of the drivers, so at least there's a silver lining to that.
Yeah, certainly. And Roger, how do you think the drivers will fare this weekend, and what are the challenges that will come to them?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they've, you know, the deals have come together very late. I mean, certainly Doohan and Sargeant were only announced a couple of days ago. So, you know, had very little time to prepare. Whether they get some time on a sim beforehand, I don't know. I think I have seen something that maybe Novalak had some testing in a sort of Formula 2 equivalent car. Obviously, that was announced a little bit earlier. Obviously, as Bethany said, clearly they're four drivers that we would probably expect to see on a Formula 2 in a Formula 2 grid for next year, all other things being equal. I was thinking, which of the four would I expect to do best in Jeddah? And I probably asked the two of you then the same question, what you think. But was probably coming down to either Novalak or Sargeant. As I said, you know, obviously the track is new for everybody, so that does even things out a little bit. It is very difficult to come in at last minute. So probably Novalak, just his sort of consistency throughout the season as maybe the best of those four. But I think they'll be reasonably close. I don't think they'll be completely off the pace. I think they'll be, you know, strong midfield probably. Could be proved completely wrong. Sargeant wins the race, or they end up last four on the grid. But I would expect them to do a reasonable showing. They're all quality performers.
I would certainly expect them to be ahead of Alessio De Leda anyway. But I guess, Bethany, before I give my views, who do you think will come out on top of the four debutants this weekend?
Well, I've already completely forgotten who they're driving with, which isn't helpful. But kind of just based on how they were this year in F3 with the teams they were in, honestly, I'd say Sargeant of the four of them, probably. I just think Sargeant's got the better overall package. Obviously, Doohan did very well, though. He got those wins in and probably the closest to challenging Helga. So either Sargeant or Doohan would be my bet.
Yeah, I'm going to say Doohan, actually, because he is the sort of driver who is able to manage races very well. We've seen that this year in FIA3. I think back to Paul Ricard and to Sochi and to Spa in particular. He is very, very strong at all three circuits. And I think in a race that is likely to be, well, in races that will likely be so chaotic, I expect him to be the one to come out on top out of all four. But sort of on a wider spectrum, really, with the four drivers, I think the best thing that they can do this weekend, rather than necessarily go for glory and try to bag some race wins and, you know, upset the established drivers, is to just gradually bed themselves into this championship, use these two rounds as learning experiences, ready for a proper Formula 2 assault in 2022. Do some nice networking, talk to some teams, make some friends, all that sort of good stuff. So I would be a little bit more disappointed if some of them start getting a little bit too overzealous in their driving and start chucking it into walls and so forth, especially if they do it in, you know, at the start of free practice, for example, when you've got so little practice time as it is, and then you're bam, straight into quali. So hopefully that will be the case. I just hope that they are all sort of like, you know, safely on respectable pace and do a reasonable job. And I think that is what the teams will be looking for from them as well. Speaking about current F2 drivers or drivers that are a little bit more sort of established in the Formula 2 world, we know about the future for four of our drivers now. Four in particular, three of them will be participating in a world championship level situation, and one will be off over to the States full time. And I guess we should probably start with the latter of those, and that is Christian Lundgaard, who's been announced as a full-time driver for Rahal Letterman-Lanigan in IndyCar after a mightily impressive debut at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, where he qualified, I think it was fourth, and finished 12th in the end, despite having a bout of food poisoning. So certainly not the most difficult track for Lundgaard to make his debut on, but I guess Roger, it's certainly a massive steal from Team Rahal to pick up this incredibly quick Dane.
Yes, and I think I'm with you. I'm very excited to see how he's going to get on. Clearly, you know, that one-off race was spectacular. I was even, after qualifying, was looking up first-time winners in IndyCar to see whether he could be added to that list. There are three, by the way. But I think it's sometimes quite difficult with Europeans going to the States that it's not always the ones that you expect to do best who actually do. So, you know, Marcus Ericsson was very strong last year, whereas I would have maybe expected Rosenqvist to be better. Obviously got another Nordic now join the team, but I think he'll fit in very well, and I think he'll do an excellent job, you know, as you said, with a very strong team to go into. So it could be we've already seen, and I think we've talked about, you know, the number of Europeans looking at opportunities in the States, and if he does make a mark, you know, that's obviously only going to get stronger as an alternative.
Yeah, certainly. And Bethany, Lingard is a driver who certainly hasn't had the best of luck this year, and whatever seems to have possibly could go wrong has gone wrong. But in IndyCar, it looks like it will probably be a fresh start for him over there.
Yeah, like you said, IndyCar's kind of so has in the past kind of. Drivers have turned expectations on their head is the phrase I'm going to go for. Drivers who we expected to do well haven't done so well, and drivers who we thought would be, who have been really good in European circuits haven't done so well in IndyCar. Obviously, Lungard's a very, very talented driver, but the luck hasn't been there. So hopefully that luck will be there over in the States. And honestly, I think it just goes to show how good a package IndyCar is at the moment. It's attracting so many drivers from Europe and obviously from America still. And its Road to Indy program is fantastic. So it's just going so well. And I'm really looking forward to it next year because there's so many talented young drivers on the grid, which we don't get in every series.
Yeah, certainly. And for next year's Indy 500, the rookie crop is going to consist of Christian Lundgaard, Callum Ilott, Romain Grosjean, Jimmy Johnson, Kyle Kirkwood, Devlin DeFrancesco, and expect another one or two more. So like the rookie field for the Indy 500 next year is just going to be absolutely bonkers. The next driver we're going to talk about is Dan Ticktum, who will be moving up to the Formula E World Championship with Neo 333, a team that has regularly struggled. Myself and Bethany have put our thoughts down in words on the Formula Scout website. We've got a whole feature about our views on how Ticktum will fare, and we've got some very contrasting opinions for sure. But I guess, Roger, it's time to get your thoughts on a very unexpected move, to say the least, because Ticktum was more sort of talking about driving, you know, things like IndyCars or Historics or whatever, rather than Formula E, which is a very, very, very different world.
Yes. Yeah. And I think I share the view of some of the comments we put out in that article. I, as you said, surprised to see him end up in Formula E. I mean, clearly he has a strong pedigree on street circuits, and that may count in his favour. It doesn't seem like the sort of championship where you really hustle cars and can aggressively race. I mean, I'm sure he's good at the sort of the tactical side and saving energy and whatever if necessary, but it doesn't really seem his style. I would have much preferred to see him go into IndyCar. I think he would settle more strongly there. But obviously there are good reasons for him to go into the Formula E. It's not, you know, it's not the strongest team by a long way, and you know, beating Oliver Turvey is not going to be easy. So interested to see how he gets on. Formula E seems very politically correct in many cases and what are expected of drivers. I'm sure he'll add some interesting comments, but yeah, I would have preferred him to see him go another route, but whether he had opportunities or not, I don't know.
Yeah, certainly. It's safe to say it's definitely going to add a bit of spice into that championship in a period where someone like Sebastian Buemi doesn't seem to have a huge amount to be sort of screaming down the pit lane about at the moment. So there is that at least. We should probably talk about the current F2 championship leader, Oscar Piastri, whose future has been secured, although it's certainly not the sort of future that I think a lot of fans were necessarily expecting. He will be in F1 next year. With Alpine, but as a reserve driver. I put out a feature back in August, I want to say, where I said that it would be an absolute, I can't remember the exact terms that I used, but it would be an absolute shame if he was, you know, sat in a garage with his arms crossed for an entire year. And that turns out that's probably what's going to be happening. Save for anything going wrong with Fernando Alonso, Esteban Ocon. So, Bethany, Oscar Piastri, Alpine reserve, irrespective of whether he's F2 champion or not, he won't be back next year. No racing on the cards for next year. Just a lot of, I assume a lot of sim work, probably driving some old slightly older cars for what little relevance that's probably going to have. And like I said, just standing around in the garage for a whole year.
It's a yoke, really, isn't it? You win. Well, obviously, we don't want to call it too early, but you potentially win FIA Formula 2, and then you drive nothing, which is even worse than De Vries had. And it's no fault of Piastri's. He literally cannot do anything more than he's already done, winning everything else. I'm not the biggest fan of Alpine's junior program. I was, when the junior program started, I thought he was great. I thought they had they were saying all the right things. And then they decided they weren't going to back their junior drivers when they had a free seat, and it was just so absurd. And right now the situation, it's just got to the point where Red Bull was not too long ago, where they had too many drivers and not enough seats. But in that case, Red Bull didn't have enough seats because they were putting Red Bull drivers in those seats, and Alpine isn't putting Alpine juniors in their seats. So it's just absurd. And for Piastri to not have a seat is just, it says so many not great things about Formula 2, that you can win the championship and not be driving anywhere. Obviously, you shouldn't just be handed a seat for winning the championship. And again, Piastri hasn't. Joe could get it. Schwartzman's up there. But it's still ridiculous that you could be leading the championship so late in the year and then already have confirmed that you're not going to race next year, and you're not going to be progressing next year. We can hope that it doesn't go the same way as Callum Ilott's did in that although again, IndyCar is fantastic, but these drivers are all aiming for F1, so we can hope that after a year on the sidelines, something positive happens for Piastri. And it's not just kind of a waste of a year sitting in the garage. On the other hand, sitting in the garage was the reason why this time last year Pietro Fittipaldi got a F1 seat. So if something dramatic happens, then Piastri is in the best place to jump in.
Yeah, there is that. And I think Piastri will be the first, well, should he win the championship, he'll be the first F2 or GP2 champion to spend a year sat on the sidelines, not racing anything since Jolyon Palmer way back in 2014. But he did eventually get his F1 chance with Renault, funnily enough, who is now Alpine. But yes, so Roger, let's get your thoughts on the Piastri situation, if you will. Like I say, I think it's a massive shame, especially with the progress that has been making and so rapidly as well. What can he expect to be sort of like learning for you know, next year, being sat in the sort of positions that the likes of Palmer and even Esteban Ocon have faced in recent years?
Yeah, I was trying to think of you know, young drivers that have been put on the sidelines and then come back in. Obviously, Ocon is the obvious one. I was trying to think of someone else. You know, obviously, there are more experienced drivers, Alonso, Prost, Senna, Prost, Lauda, that you can go back and think of who've come back. But the sort of young ones who sat out, it does seem to take them quite a while to get back. I think momentum is key in a young driver's career, and that sort of confidence, which, you know, Piastri seems pretty down to earth from what you see of him in interviews, and you, Craig, have been involved in more of the press conferences and seen him speaking there, but he seems reasonably you know, to have his feet on the ground. But you know, he must have a certain confidence winning championship after championship for 2 years, potentially 3 years running, and to lose that momentum. My concern would be, you know, is there a seat in 23? We know Ocon is already signed up. If Alonso is outperforming Ocon and is still wants to continue, are Alpine brave enough to sack Alonso to bring in Piastri? I guess we know, or it's not been officially announced, I think, by Formula One, but the free practice running should be enhanced. So it should be more than just sim running. And if he gets, I think they're talking about two sessions or two events in the year. So to get some proper running, but you know, I'm skeptical that you can really show much there that compared to, you know, running a proper race series. So you can imagine some, you know, if Hauger or Doohan storm through Formula 2 next year, are they going to sort of jump to the top of the queue, and is he quickly forgotten? But you know, it's absolutely correct. Looking back, you know, nobody has had that sort of record, and we're all trying not to tempt fate by putting him down as the champion. And there seems to be more and more discussion, sort of also in the media, that you know, he's more or less got it sewn up. But you know, it's unheard of for somebody to have that record and not go straight into Formula One. I personally, I think it's more of a criticism of Formula One than Formula Two. You know, we've talked about the calendar and specifics for this year, but you know, it's 20 seats, of which three or four are basically purely determined by cash, and is just very few people dropping out of that environment. Without Alpine signing up a second team, it's difficult to see where the obvious alternative would come.
Yep. Timing is everything, and unfortunately, time has not necessarily been on Piastri's side this year. I guess we should talk about his Alpine stablemate, who will be racing in Formula One next year. The third of the Alpine drivers, so all three Alpine F2 drivers will be graduating in one way or another to some sort of position next year. But the one who'll be in the highest of those will be Guan Yu Zhou, who will graduate to Formula One with Alfa Romeo next year. Obviously, as a huge sort of, you know, huge anticipation about him in his native China. Of course, as the very first Chinese Formula One driver. And there's a lot of huge push from Formula One in particular to really try and break through into that market. And that's something that is going to be quite interesting to see, and to see whether that will incentivize having not one but two Chinese races on the calendar for 2023 going forward. It does seem like it's just a one-year deal, in the anticipation that Teo Pourchaire, Sauber's own junior, could well be racing for the team in 2023. But that does not mean to say that Joe will be just a one-year wonder, with his backing and with having that sort of pressure to keep a Chinese driver on the grid. It would seem highly likely that he will sprout up somewhere else. So I've written a long enough column sort of expressing why I think Joe is going to be more than capable Grand Prix driver. I don't think he's going to be a world champion, no, but I think he's going to be one of those drivers who will go down as perfectly competent driver, able to help move a team slightly forward. Alfa Romeo is certainly a team that needs being brought forward after a rather dismal 2021, with two drivers who, to be frank, haven't really performed well enough given the machinery that they've got and the and what the Williams drivers in particular have got at their disposal. So I'm intrigued to see how Joe gets on. Obviously a very strong teammate in Valtteri Bottas as well, who is a driver I rate a lot higher than a lot of people seem to do. Incredibly quick over one lap, which it's not necessarily been Joe's strength in Formula 2 in a lot of ways, even though he's picked up poles. But Joe's able to manage races quite well, is able to execute some ridiculous strategies as well. Just look at his entire Bahrain weekend this year for a very fine example of that. But I think I will come to Bethany first.
Yeah, I think Joe's a very competent driver. There's a lot of talk online because he's coming in with so much backing that he's just a pay driver, but he's also a good driver. It's very rare to find a driver that's going to even get to Formula 2 without a considerable amount of backing. So yes, he's getting into F1 with a lot of backing, but I don't think that diminishes how good he is. And I think even if you were going on talent alone, Joe is one of the drivers that you would say should get a promotion up from F2. Just last year, you guys were pipping him for the championship. If I'd remembered about him and I hadn't, I probably would have said, yeah, him too, because he is very good. And it was only really bad luck that stopped him getting the title last year. He had a lot of bad luck. So I think he should do really well. I think he deserves this. And I think it's great for F1 do have that Chinese representation. It's insane that he is the first Chinese driver, given how many people are in China. But I guess that goes to show that the FIA's kind of promotion is working over there, especially if he's just the first Chinese driver. I'm sure he won't be the last. So it's great, and I think Joe really deserves this, and I think he's going to do well. I think he's getting a lot of undeserved hate as well. And hopefully that goes away before the start of the season.
Yeah, yeah, certainly. And I might echo that sentiment regarding the hate that he does seem to be getting, especially on social media. So, Roger, it's come to you for your thoughts on Joe and how you think he'll fare in Alfa Romeo next year up against Valtteri Bottas.
Maybe slightly contrary. I probably also don't quite rate Bottas as highly as you do, Craig. But I think Joe is definitely competent. He has the experience. I don't think he'll do a bad job, and I don't think he'll be completely out of his depth. And I think he'll on occasions show up well against Bottas. Actually, I was just trying to think of a sort of comparison. You know, somebody like Latifi, who also gets a lot of criticism, but had a reasonably good Formula Two record, and you know, now on his day is getting close to George Russell occasionally in the Williams. To be honest, is Joe one of the 20 best drivers available? No. Is he going to be world champion? Probably no. But there's a big group who on their day you would say, you know, could do a decent job in a team. And as there've been various comments, obviously he was, you know, outscored by Mazepin, who is generally the sort of laughing stock of the grid in social media. But didn't have a bad, you know, single-seater record before Formula One, so clearly it's, you know, it's great to have a Chinese driver, and from that perspective, I think it's definitely a positive for the sport. Obviously, come back to the problem of there only being 20 cars, so I'm keen to see what he does. You know, if he wins the last two Formula Two rounds and or scores enough points and takes enough wins and wins the title, then maybe we have a slightly different opinion. But I think just because he's been around so long in Formula 3 and Formula 2, it's difficult to, you know, put him in the same category as a Piastri or a Porsche or even a Tictum or a Schwartzman. But I think it'll be a good step. As you said, the three Alpine juniors move up, though Joe obviously loses the relationship with Alpine. One-year deal, I think he's going to struggle to make a huge impression in 1 year. I don't know what impact the wider wheels will have, and his experience with those rims, whether that will give him some additional plus points. But yeah, interested to see. I think obviously a very nice guy, friendly, seems well liked within the paddock and within the teams, but probably not one of the top 20 drivers.
Mm-hmm. Yep, certainly, and I'm sure we'll probably try and squeeze in another podcast all about Joe, I think, maybe ahead of the start of the F1 season, like we did with the three rookies for this year, with none other than the brilliant Ed Straw from the race. So I guess now we should probably actually talk about the championship, as we've been nattering on for ages. We have alluded to it took a little bit, but I think we should really start to get properly thick into it now. We have got a feature on the website which should have gone up on Tuesday, and basically outlining the various championship contenders that we've got. And mathematically there are 10 championship contenders, although Richard Bashore has obviously lost his seat, so he doesn't technically count, so that makes 9 mathematical nine drivers in mathematical contention. But I think realistically you're looking at 5 for the top spot. And those are Piastri, Joe, Robert Schwartzman, Dan Ticktum, and Teo Pourchaire. And there's 58 points that separate the five of them. Piastri is on 178, Joe is on 142, Schwartzman on 135, Ticktum on 129, and Pourchaire on 120. All of them have won at least two races this season. All of them have had at least three podiums this season. And between Piastri and Joe, they've had three wins apiece and seven podiums apiece. So there's not a huge amount really to separate the two, although Piastri has certainly had the momentum over the past three F2 rounds. What that counts for, though, after a 10-week gap going into two entirely new circuits, however, I'll leave that down to for you, the listener, to make your mind up about. But I guess coming back to Bethany, we've got these drivers, five drivers. I'm making it for the championship fight. Ticktum bizarrely says is out of the fight, but I'm not convinced by that. I think is very much in it. But how are you assessing this championship challenge coming into the final six races of the season?
Well, trying not to trip over myself and say Piastri's going to win it, because even though it looks like a considerable gap, considering the championship layout this year with the two reverse grid races, it's not going to be a simple weekend for anybody, especially with on such a fast circuit where they don't know it, and the high possibility of safety cars. I don't think it's safe to say Piastri's going to get it. I think, like you say, the top five, I think definitely the top three. I don't want to say I agree with Ticktum, but I do think it's more the top three, the favourites, and then the top, then Ticktum and Pourchaire kind of like a little bit further behind. But okay, we've got nine very competent drivers who could win the championship. Realistically, we've got three very, very competent drivers who could win the championship. I think it's going to depend on who can get the best out of practice. I think that's going to be kind of what determines how the weekend will go. I think generally Piastri's been better at kind of managing the weekend and kind of making up for lower starting positions in the first two races. So even with that 10 week gap, I'd say the momentum's probably more on his side. But then Joe's got the fact that he's got F1 next year, so maybe he's kind of pumped up by that a little bit. Schwartzman's still trying to, as far as we know, still trying to sort out what he's doing next year. So to have a strong weekend this year, a strong weekend this weekend would be fantastic for him in that respect, as well as for the championship standings. So I think everyone's got a lot to play for, even without the championship standings taken into account. And then everyone wants to be the F2 champion. So it's just, whatever happens, it's going to be a good weekend. It's going to be a dramatic weekend.
Yeah, certainly. There's a 130 points up for grabs across these final six races. I make it, which is why so many drivers are still mathematically in contention. Roger, do you sort of like assess the situation in a similar way to Bethany? I've got my maths wrong. It's only three drivers really in contention, or do you think that the likes of Ticktum and Pourchaire can very much count themselves as wild cards that can certainly spring a surprise in the final two rounds?
Yeah, I would keep it at the five. I wouldn't rule out Ticktum and Pourchaire. I think, you know, the way the race weekends are, you can have a DNF in the first sprint race, and you know, you're then starting at the back in the second sprint race, and your whole weekend can go pretty badly wrong. So if I'm right and there are going to be crashes and incidents and safety cars, I think in Jeddah, then I think there is plenty of potential for a random result. And there are a lot of possible winners. The reverse grids throw everything up in the air. So I think I think you're right. You know, Vips, though, obviously went very well in Baku, winning the feature race and the sprint race, then it's too far down, because if there aren't significant retirements, then, you know, as long as you're qualifying reasonably well, then you should pick up some points, and it does tend to even out the scores. So it's difficult to come away with kind of zero points from a weekend. But I think you can make a case for, you know, Tictum and Carlin being on having strong momentum and being on the rise. And Carlin did very well in Abu Dhabi 2 years ago, if I remember. Porsche was obviously also strong in the recent races, maybe had been held back a little bit by his wrist injury, whatever he had from Baku. Zhou, is the pressure now off? He's got his drive, whatever happens. So maybe there's more pressure on Piastri. I think it's still very open. I think Schwartzman's had some bad luck, and probably is due a strong result. So I think very difficult to call between those five. If you're betting, I suppose you go with Piastri. But I could see somebody like Tictum making a charge, particularly if Carlin can get it, can get the car on the pace, and you know, Deruval has been strong as well. So they look to be in the sort of form team at the moment.
Yeah, certainly. And the last time we went to an incredibly fast brand new circuit in Formula 2 was, of course, the Bahrain Banter Circuit, as I affectionately referred to it. And who won both races there? It was Carlin. So I think that's probably a good omen for that team. And they were so strong in the closing stages of 2020. So certainly don't count out Tictum. I think he needs to have two very strong weekends. Of course, he's had a podium in every single round so far this season, so you wouldn't put it beyond him to have, you know, to repeat that sort of success. But he will need to rely a little bit on Piastri having a bit of a wobble, and we haven't really seen too much of that from the Australian, apart from really in the first weekend, but he bounced back so emphatically at Monaco. And it's going to be very tricky, I think, for Schwartzman's a driver that I really want to sort of bring up, because he's got all of the speed to be able to very much be in the championship fight, but he just hasn't quite delivered it regularly enough on a qualifying run, and because qualifying dictates the grid for two of the races, Schwartzman has found himself having to have to utilize the first sprint race in particular of a weekend to pick up the sizable amounts of his points, which just isn't quite enough to have a championship charge. I feel really when the big points are awarded in the feature race, even if more points are awarded in the sprint races, I think through Piastri and Joe's form, you can certainly make the case that the qualifying has proven to be incredibly important this year, and it's been the same case in FIA Formula 3, where where Dennis Hauger was so potent in particular, what was in qualifying, that's how he built up his championship really from that. So I think if Schwartzman's going to be in this fight, he needs to up his game in qualifying for sure. Tictum's another driver who hasn't had a pole this season, and there's every reason why Tictum should be able to rectify those issues, but it's just a case of whether he and Carlin can get on top of them and really have two massively effective weekends to see whether or not that they're able to come out on top. I think it'll be very tricky, obviously, but they should probably have the pace to do so coming into these final two rounds, based on what little data and knowledge we do have. So with Poirier, I think it's going to be very tricky for him to nab the title, being 58 points behind, but he's so strong in Monaco. So I don't want to rule him out by any stretch of the imagination. If he can repeat those sorts of heroics again this weekend, he can certainly cause a huge amount of damage into Piastri's point lead, for sure. And then we'll have to see when we go to Abu Dhabi. But he will probably need to topple Piastri in qualifying and to make some pretty robust moves on the racetrack as well, something that he's certainly not been afraid to do. So just to cover off who's won what this year, Piastri's won in Bahrain, he's won at Monza, and he's won at Sochi. Joe has won in Bahrain, Monaco, and Silverstone. Schwartzman has won in Baku and at Silverstone. Tictum has won in Monaco, inheriting a win from Liam Lawson, and in Sochi. And Poirier has won in Monaco and at Monza. So that's the situation, basically. We're counting out the likes of Vips and Daravala, Lawson and Drugovich. I think they're just a little bit too far back, and Vips will probably have another reliability issue or four, given how his luck has been this year. So I'm going to throw the last question over to you guys. And quite simply, it's just, who's going to win the title? Simple as that. And Bethany, let's go with you first.
Not to jinx it, but Piastri.
Yep. Quite simple.
Roger, I feel like we've covered off why. I think it's going to be him.
Yeah. Roger, are you going for Piastri as well, or are you going to shake things up a little bit?
I think the gap is just a little bit too big, even with all those factors, for anyone else to overtake him. If we want to be random, then I'll go for Tictum.
Right, good. I was hoping that someone was going to say something other than Piastri, because I'm going to say Piastri as well. But I think that Joe is going to take it to the last race or two. I don't think it's going to be sealed up quite as early as people think, and it certainly won't be a dominant championship by any stretch of the imagination. So do keep up with Formula Scout throughout the final two weekends of the year, with Formula 2 in particular, and all of the news reaction analysis and features and podcasts and everything else over the next couple of weeks, which I'm trying to do in the middle of a house move as well. So that's going to be extra fun for me. Hopefully I can find somewhere with internet that drops out less frequently. But alas, we should be back next week with a very special podcast, I'm hoping, with a very special guest on, which I'm very much looking forward to. So do keep an eye on that. There'll be plenty of F2 chatter there, that's for sure. Got plenty of fun features on the website. We've spoken a little bit about the Tictum one and the championship status one, and lots of other fun little bits here and there as well, including lovely feature on the junior series career of Sir Frank Williams, who sadly passed away earlier this week as well. And there's a brilliant feature written by you, Roger, on the status of junior single seaters as a whole, following the announcement from Rook and Motorsport that they're leaving to focus on GT racing. And there's even a feature on Justin Wilson battling out Mark Webber over in F3000 as well. So for fans of F3000, that will be something for you. So do keep an eye out on the website, on the socials at Formula Scout. And we'll be back soon with another Formula Scout podcast.